though I'm sort of opposed to trying. Verity, she sounded genuinely upset. No real surprise there. I can't hold her for much longer. She's fighting me. I didn't know you could hold someone like this at all. It's a new trick for you. It was Kitty's idea. Margaret/Sarah's face contorted like she'd been punched. She's fighting me hard, Verity. Come on. We have to get you out of here before I lose her. Please.
Yes, do run, said Robert. You've killed one of us already. You've shown us where our weaknesses are. We'll find you, and when we do, you'll wish to God that you'd let us take you here and now, or you could surrender. Let us treat your wounds, tell us where to find your witch, and submit to the mercy of the Covenant.
I wasn't aware that we were in the business of mercy, said Margaret, all cold fury and hate. Her voice was her own again, all traces of Sarah gone, as she pulled her gun away from Robert's temple and swung it toward me. I widened my stance, trying to cover both of them at once. It wasn't going to work, and I knew it. From the satisfied gleam in her eyes, so did she.
You've befouled my mind, you little bitch. Do you know what that means? It means you lose, said Uncle Mike,
stepping through the doorway behind her and aiming his crossbow at the back of her head. Eustace was only half a step behind him, deceptively sweet-looking in a little pink pinafore. Her hair was pulled into girlish pigtails and tied off with white bows. She was smiling. That's never a good sign with Eustace. You're outnumbered, I said, with as much bravado as I could muster. Drop your weapons. I promise we'll be more fair to you than you were going to be to me.
No,
said Margaret, and cocked back the hammer on her gun, only to freeze as Eustace calmly reached forward and fastened one rapidly expanding hand, already better classed as a paw, over the gun, completely engulfing both it and Margaret's hand.
You may fire, said Eustace, as if she were conferring some great favor. I will remove your entire arm a moment later, but you may fire.
I'd really rather she didn't, I said. The black spots were spreading. I teetered, catching myself at the last minute, and kept aiming my gun at Robert. We have to. We gotta. This has to end. They can't walk away from this.
But we can't kill them either, said Dominic.
He appeared in the doorway behind Uncle Mike. His face was set in a blank, expressionless mask. It didn't waver as he looked past the heads of the Covenant agents to me, filthy, naked, and bleeding all over the warehouse floor.
If we kill them, the Covenant sends more. We win, said Robert.
Eustace squeezed Margaret's hand. Margaret yelped, unable to help herself.
I am not so sure of that, said Eustace. There is a difference between living and retaining all your limbs. They can't leave, said Uncle Mike. They know who Verity is. It's not safe to let them go.
So they can't live, and they can't die. It was taking everything I had just to keep myself upright. Oh, and here's one more for you. Dominic can't stay here if we send them home. They'd never forgive another defection. There was no way to win. There was no way to get out of this with everyone still standing.
No, but they might be willing to bury a traitor.
Dominic stepped around his former colleagues and crossed to where I was standing. He took the gun from my hand, aiming it at Robert as he slid an arm around my waist, holding me up. I let myself sag into him. Then I realized what he'd just said. What? No. No. We're not going to kill you. I wanted to pull away and glare at him. I didn't have the strength.
I wasn't going to ask you to, said Dominic. Sarah.
I'm here. Sarah stepped up behind Uncle Mike, moving into the room on silent feet. Eustace, let go of Margaret's hands. Robert's anti-telepathy charm is attached to his Medal of St. George. Take it off him.
Yes,
said Eustace. She released Margaret, although she didn't release Margaret's gun, and from the way Margaret groaned as Eustace yanked it away, she broke at least one of Margaret's fingers in the process, and turned toward Robert. To his credit, he didn't flinch when Eustace reached for his throat with her vast, taloned paw. The chain on his medal snapped easily when she pulled on it. Eustace looked at the medal curiously for a moment, then shrugged and tucked it into the neckline of her dress. "Sarah," I said. "It's all right, Verity." She smiled at me, uncertainly. "I can do this. I don't know."
"We have no choice," said Dominic softly.
He tightened his arm around me.
"They have to live. I have to die. I can't let them endanger you or your family. This is the only way."
"But Sarah..."
"Trust her,"
said Dominic. I closed my eyes. "Okay." Cuckoos are natural memory manipulators. It's part of how their power works. They fit into the world without leaving a seam, and that means they have to insert themselves, retroactively, into the lives of every person they meet. It's an autonomic function most of the time, something that just happens around them, as easy and as natural as breathing. Sarah spent her days working to keep that very thing from happening. She wanted to be known and cared about for who she really was, and not because everyone she met decided that she was their long-lost sister, daughter, or best friend from college. Even autonomic functions can become intentional if you're willing to work for it. I opened my eyes to see Sarah standing in front of Margaret and Robert, her eyes glowing such a brilliant white that it actually chased the black spots away from the edges of my vision. Margaret looked terrified. Robert looked resigned, like this was the fate he had been preparing himself for since the day he reached American soil.
"You'll pay,"
he said, in a calm, quiet tone.
"We found you once, and we can find you again. Eventually, your whole stinking family will have to pay for your crimes against the Covenant and against humanity."
"Maybe that's true," I said, letting myself slump against Dominic. "But you know what? You won't be the ones to come looking for us."
"Hold them up," said Sarah.
I think I'm the only one who heard the tremor in her voice. Eustace grabbed Robert, while Uncle Mike lowered his crossbow and grabbed Margaret. Sarah reached out and touched their foreheads, making skin contact. Skin contact always made it easier for her. The Covenant agents went limp. That seemed like a good idea. I couldn't feel my feet anymore, and I was so tired. I stopped fighting to keep myself upright at all. Staying awake and on my feet didn't matter. We'd done it. The Covenant didn't know, wouldn't know, that the family survived. There would be no purge of Manhattan. We'd won, and that meant that I could rest. The last thing I heard was Dominic shouting my name. Then there was nothing but the white glare from Sarah's eyes, chasing away the shadows, and I fell into the light. Only to fall back out again as Dominic shoved me away, grabbing the gun from my hand in the same motion. Didn't he already have my gun? Something was wrong, and I couldn't tell what it was anymore. Sarah was on the floor, clear fluid leaking from a hole at the center of her forehead, and Margaret was somehow free, her own gun aimed at Dominic's chest. "Traitor!" she shouted, and fired. For some reason, the servitors were gone. For some reason, nothing moved to stop her when she pulled the trigger. Something should have stopped her. Instead, Dominic staggered back, making a sharp barking noise as the bullet slammed through his collarbone. Then he raised my gun and fired three times, aiming for Margaret, who ducked easily out of the way. One bullet went into Uncle Mike. The other two went into Eustace. I knew from past experience that two bullets weren't going to do much but slow her down. Slowing her down was more than enough. The force of the bullets knocked her backward and allowed Robert to break free. He spun around, pulling a knife from his belt, and drove it into her throat.
Eustace keened like a wounded animal, and fell. And all this before I could hit the floor. I landed hard, my head bouncing off the wood before I managed to catch myself. I raised my head, squinting, in time to see Margaret shoot Dominic again. This time, her aim was better, befitting a Healy girl. She grouped her shots at the center of his chest, three holes appearing in the fabric of his shirt. He looked surprised. Then he fell too. "This is wrong. This is wrong. We don't lose like this. This is wrong!" I tried to scream, but the air wasn't there. Margaret smiled as she turned toward me, raised her gun, and pulled the trigger again. And then, there was nothing at all. Chapter 24.
"Don't you dare leave me, baby girl. There's been enough dying. Mind your mama now, and stay."
Frances Brown. Waking up in an unknown location, but at least it isn't a warehouse somewhere in Manhattan, being held captive by the Covenant of St. George, which makes it a definite improvement. Also, not dead. Nothing looked a lot like the glaring white of an active cuckoo's eyes. I opened my eyes. The unrelenting whiteness didn't go away, although it did change forms, becoming the overhead lights which were shining directly down into my face. I groaned and tried to block the light with my arm, only to discover that the various tubes connected to my body made that impossible. They don't usually connect tubes to dead people, not unless they're preparing them for embalming, and this wasn't a funeral home. It didn't smell right for that. I blinked, abandoning my efforts to cover my face. The glare got a little more manageable as my eyes adjusted. Only a little, though. I blinked again, finally settling for squinting through my eyelashes as I tried to get a handle on where exactly I was, other than not dead. The memory of being shot the first time, by Peter, was still very vivid and real. The memory of being shot the second time, by Margaret, was already fading like a bad dream. "Damn it, Sarah," I muttered, and twisted in the bed enough to look around. It was a small room, with walls painted a cheery shade of eggshell blue and trimmed in even cheerier yellow. Various machines beeped quietly to themselves, monitoring my vital signs. I followed one of the tubes in my arm up to an IV stand, where a bag of clear liquid was presumably responsible for keeping me hydrated. That also explained the weird pinching sensation at my groin. I'd been out for long enough that they'd needed to catheterize me to keep me from wetting the bed. Always the sort of thing a girl wants to wake up to. On the plus side, nothing hurt. Maybe that meant I was flying on morphine, but at the moment, I'd take it. It was better than the alternative. Better still would be having some vague idea of where I was. I started looking around for something that looked like a call button. I was still looking when I heard footsteps. I turned to see Dominic standing in the room's doorway, white as a sheet, and holding on to the lintel for balance.
"You are an insufferable woman," he said, barely above a whisper. "You slept for 3 days, and then you simply had to wake up during the 5 minutes that I was out of the room, didn't you?"
My heart leaped, even as my lungs gave up working to pull air into my body. I managed, forcing the word out despite my lack of oxygen. That was enough to get my lungs working again, at least. "You're okay. Are you okay? You're okay." I was babbling. I didn't care. Just seeing him, alive and standing on his own 2 feet, was more than enough. I half remembered him dying, bleeding out on the warehouse floor, and that had never happened. The memory was shredding like a cobweb even as I tried to look at it. I shuddered all over, trying to wipe the false events out of my mind.
"Whoa," I said.
My voice quavered. I hated it for that. I thought I was protected by that anti-telepathy charm.
It turns out that when your cousin really, turns on the juice, she punches rather harder than any of us suspected she was capable of, said Dominic, as he came to stand by the side of my bed. Even Eastis, who claims to possess a natural resistance to Sarah's manipulations, got somewhat confused about what had actually happened, which could have been rather unpleasant, as it seems that she dislikes zombies, strongly, and when she saw me up and moving about, despite having seen me die, she was sure I was a zombie. I very nearly found myself put down as a menace to the public health. I laughed at that. I couldn't help myself. It was a small, strained thing, but it still made Dominic smile. "I didn't think the irony would be lost on you," he said. "The former cryptid hunter, killed by a cryptid, as a cryptid. You would doubtless have been disappointed that you'd missed it." My laughter died.
"No, I wouldn't have been disappointed," I said. "I already saw you die once today."
"Ah, yes. I was spared the strain of seeing you shot down. I fell first, after all."
Dominic walked over to the bed, where he sat down gingerly on the very edge of the mattress.
"Your Uncle Mike informs me that Sarah put together a thoroughly rational and believable scenario."
"Peter?" I asked.
"According to the memories she gave them, I killed him myself when I broke in looking for my false price girl. You were a cocktail waitress that I was cultivating to look like an enemy of the Covenant, so that I could rally the cryptids of Manhattan to my side."
He leaned over and pressed a kiss against my forehead.
"Even when you're not allowed to be a true representative of your family, you're dangerous."
"Yeah, well," I sniffed. It was getting hard to keep from crying. "I guess some things never change."
"No, I guess they don't."
"But why would you?"
"Turn traitor? It's happened before, Verity, and it will happen again. Boogeymen and dragons offering wealth and knowledge, succubi and oceanids offering love. It happens. Most traitors simply die quickly. Few are as successful as your family at thwarting us."
He paused, grimacing.
"Thwarting the Covenant. I suppose I need to adjust my thinking."
There was nothing I could say to that. Leaving the only place he'd ever called his own was still a raw wound in his voice. Any words of comfort would have just been salt rubbed into it. Dominic sighed and continued.
"I killed Peter, and Margaret killed us both, while Robert took out our allies. As for the bodies, there was an unfortunate collision between a stray bullet and a gas pipe, and the warehouse was lost. All remains were destroyed."
I closed my eyes. "That's convenient."
"True, but they both believe it with all their hearts."
I felt his fingers on my forehead, brushing back my hair.
"They'll return to England and give their report to the Covenant. By the time another team can be dispatched, the cryptids of the city will be ready to disappear, as if they'd never existed."
"The dragons can't move."
"The Covenant still believes dragons to be extinct, and dragon princesses are on the books as too difficult to tell from humans to be worth hunting. They're to be killed if encountered, but a waste of resources to search for unless the coffers are getting low."
Dominic stroked my hair back again.
"Manhattan will be safe. Margaret and Robert uncovered a conspiracy by one of their own. All the trainees and journeymen will be kept under closer attention for a while. I doubt they'll be sending anyone any time soon."
"Wait." I opened my eyes, staring up at him. "They really believe you're dead?"
"Yes. And as they were the target of your fair cousin's whammy, they're going to keep believing it."
Dominic grimaced.
"Remind me never to make her angry."
"Smart man." I looked around the room again. "Where am I?"
"In the recovery ward of St. Giles Hospital," said a familiar, if unexpected, female voice. "Welcome back to the land of the living, very, very."
"Grandma?" Eyes wide, I turned toward the voice. "Grandma!"
The black-haired, blue-eyed woman standing in the doorway smiled.
"Hello, sweetheart. How are you feeling?"
"Surprisingly good, given the whole shot-in-the-gut-and-lost-consciousness thing and..." "Grandma, what are you doing here?" I glanced to Dominic. "Have you met my grandmother?"
"Yes."
Dominic stood, offering a nod to my grandmother.
"Ma'am?" "Dominic," she said.
He looked back to me. "I'm going to let Mike and Ryan know that you're awake. Please, I know you're a mad woman, but try to stay still and take it easy." He pressed a kiss to my forehead before turning and leaving the room before I could react. Grandma Angela stepped aside to let him pass. Once he was gone, she stepped fully into the room, pausing to close the door behind herself, and started walking toward my bed.
"I'm glad you're awake."
"So am I." Angela Baker is my mother's mother, and we're not related by blood. Mom was adopted, since Grandma wasn't willing to spend enough time with a member of her own species to have a biological child. She looks more like Sarah than anyone else in the family, with pale skin, black hair, and improbably blue eyes that sometimes go white around the edges. She's old enough to be my mother's mother by birth, not just adoption, but she looks like she's barely Mom's age. I have long since resigned myself to the fact that I won't look nearly as good as either of my grandmothers when I'm their age, since Grandma Alice spends most of her time in dimensions where time runs differently, and Grandma Angela isn't human. She adopted Mom because cuckoos can only have children with other cuckoos, and, like all sane individuals, Grandma hates pretty much every cuckoo she's ever met. She adopted Sarah because Sarah was just a little girl who needed a home, and she wanted to find out whether cuckoos were really innately sociopathic. I looked at her face, so grim, so serious, and felt a chill run down my spine. Maybe she was here because we finally had the answer. "Grandma," I said, "what are you doing here?"
"Mike called me once they managed to get you and Sarah both here and stabilized," said Grandma.
She pulled a chair from against the wall closer to the bed, sitting down in it.
"It was pretty touch and go for the first 24 hours.
I bit my lip. "How bad?"
"Your doctor will tell you exactly what the bullet perforated that wasn't supposed to be perforated, and all those other nasty things. All I know is that if you didn't have a Caladrius working on you, you probably wouldn't have lived. Please, don't get shot like that again. I don't think my heart could take it."
She smiled weakly at her own joke. Cuckoos don't have hearts. Their circulatory systems are entirely decentralized, controlled by micropulses of muscles throughout the body. Cryptid humor is weird sometimes. "Why didn't Uncle Mike call Mom and Dad?"
"He did, but I was the only family member who could get here before you were out of surgery, and given the circumstances, I was the only one for the job."
The Bakers lived in Columbus, Ohio, the same city where my brother was doing his research project on basilisk breeding. I frowned. "Is Alex here?"
"No. I couldn't reach him when the call first came, and I told him he didn't need to come once we were sure that you were going to live."
Her smile was fleeting and strained.
"I didn't see any point in filling this hospital with anxious relatives before we had to. Not when Mike and I are already filling that role, and your various cryptid friends are coming and going at all hours."
She wasn't mentioning Sarah. The chill intensified. "Grandma, what aren't you telling me?" She took a deep breath. When she let it out, she seemed smaller somehow, like she had deflated.
"Verity, it's important you understand that I am not angry with you. I am not angry with any of you. You were in an impossible situation, and it was a choice between doing what you did and endangering the whole family. I might have done the same thing if I were in your position. Sarah made her own choices."
Alarm bells were ringing in my head. I sat up a little straighter. "Where's Sarah?"
"She's asleep."
Grandma's lips thinned into a hard line.
She's been asleep since I got here. I made her sleep, because it was the only way to make her stop screaming.
Oh, God, I whispered, slumping against the pillows. Is she going to be okay?
I'll be honest with you, Verity. I don't know. I don't have any way of knowing. Cuckoo psychology is such a strange thing, and Sarah didn't start out like me.
I swallowed hard, looking at her as levelly as I could. You mean Sarah didn't start out knowing right from wrong? Grandma didn't say anything. By human standards, cuckoos are born sociopathic. They get it from their mothers. Literally, when a telepathic sociopath carries a baby for 9 months, that baby is going to be born with a radically skewed moral compass. Grandma Angela was born normal by human standards because she's not a receptive telepath, so she didn't get the in utero conditioning to teach her that other people existed only to be pawns and playthings. Sarah, on the other hand, did. Grandma adopted her when she was 7 years old, after her human foster parents died, and spent years after that carefully removing the deep conditioning Sarah had received from her biological mother. Sarah is a sweet, thoughtful, empathic person. She didn't start out that way, and there was no way of knowing whether Grandma had managed to get all the little mental landmines out of Sarah's head. That was a large part of why Sarah always arranged to audit courses at schools near one of her cousins. If she ever went back to her cuckoo roots, she wanted one of us close enough to kill her before she did too much damage. My mouth was suddenly dry. I swallowed several times before I managed to ask, "Is there anything I can do?"
"What she did," Grandma shook her head. "I couldn't do that if I wanted to. If you'd asked me, I would have told you it wasn't possible. But she managed it, and now she won't stop screaming. She hurt herself, Verity. She hurt herself very badly. Not in a physical way, although that would have been easier. Somewhere inside her mind."
"Like pulling a muscle?" I ventured.
"Something like that."
Grandma sighed, very briefly looking every one of her years. She reached over and patted my hand.
"I'm glad you're all right, and I truly don't blame any of you for what happened. But Sarah's going back to Ohio with me, and I don't know how long it's going to take her to recover."
Or if she was going to recover. Grandma didn't say that part. She didn't need to. It was written in the tension of her mouth and the defeated slant of her shoulders. "I'm sorry," I whispered.
"Don't be sorry. Just get better."
Grandma leaned forward and hugged me tight.
"You had us all scared, Very, Very. And you know Sarah wouldn't have done it if she didn't love you more than anything."
"I know," I said, and returned the hug as best I could with the tube sticking out of my arms. "If there's anything I can do..."
"Just get better,"
Grandma repeated, and let go, standing.
"I don't want to tire you out. You're supposed to be still recovering."
"Okay," I sighed, sagging deeper into the mattress. "I love you, Grandma."
"I love you too, Very, Very."
She leaned in and tapped me gently on the forehead.
"Now get some rest."
Grandma wasn't a receptive telepath, but that didn't mean she couldn't push. I was asleep almost before I felt myself getting tired, and I didn't hear her leave the room. I awoke to the sound of cheering.
"Hail the resurrection of the arboreal priestess!"
Normally, waking up to the mice will elicit a groan and maybe a flung pillow. This time, I just smiled and said, without opening my eyes, "Amen." The mice went nuts, shouting hosannas and praising the hospital room, the bed, the pillows, and everything else they could think of to high heaven. One enterprising acolyte even began praising my bedhead, calling it
the tousled proof of our glorious priestess's trials.
I'd have to remember that one the next time there wasn't enough moose in the world. Next to the bed, Uncle Mike snorted and said,
"You know, they're not going to shut up for like a week."
"I'm looking forward to it." I opened my eyes and turned to face him, a process that was greatly simplified by the fact that most of the tubes, and the catheter, had been removed while I was sleeping. "Hi, Uncle Mike."
"Hi, Very Girl. You planning to stay awake for a little while this time?"
"That's not fair," I protested. "Grandma knocked me out before."
"Because you needed it. If you're awake, you don't need it anymore. The doctor says you're just about fully recovered at this point. I knew you were too stubborn to stay injured for long."
Now Uncle Mike smiled, relief underscoring the expression.
"You scared the crap out of me, you know."
"Hail the familial terror!" exulted the mice.
"Hey, this is a hospital," I said, sitting up to see the congregation gathered on my bed. There were only about a dozen of them present. It had sounded like more.
"Keep it down."
"Yes, priestess,"
said one of the mice, sounding abashed. The others cheered, very softly.
"That's better."
I looked back to Uncle Mike. I didn't exactly sign up to get kidnapped.
"I know, I know."
Uncle Mike scowled.
"When we got that anti-telepathy charm back, Kitty took it to some hide-behinds for a look-see. They said it had a homing compulsion on it. Once you picked it up, you had to return it to Margaret."
"Well, that's one bit of stupidity explained," I said. "When you say, got it back, you mean..."
"That you had swallowed it, yes. And no, I'm not the one who had to do the actual retrieval."
"Thank God for small favors," I muttered, before asking in a normal voice, "How did you find me?"
"Dominic, that boy's crazy about you, you know. He'd better be. The Covenant will never take him back now."
"Good thing I'm crazy about him, too." I tried to say it lightly. I failed. "Uncle Mike, about Sarah?"
"She's the one who made sure we kept looking for you, right up until Dominic showed up to help us out," he said. "She's the one who got the dragons looking for you, and it was the dragons who followed the Covenant back to their base and confirmed you were being held in that warehouse. She's the one who transported the mice to the area to survey the ground floor and give us the all clear. Sarah knew what she was doing. I know it's hard for you to believe right now, but she had her eyes wide open through this whole thing. None of it just happened to her without her knowing it was a risk, just like you didn't get shot without knowing it was a risk. Am I clear?"
"Crystal," I sighed. "I still feel awful."
"Good. You should feel awful."
I blinked at him. "Wait a pep talk, Uncle Mike." He looked at me implacably.
"I'm serious. If a member of your family gets hurt, you feel bad. You figure out why it happened. You make sure it doesn't happen again. Feeling awful is the first step. Everything after this is up to you."
"Pep talk received," I said. "Good," said a new voice from the doorway. I turned to see a man in scrubs and a lab coat with broad white feathered wings. He was looking at a clipboard. Then he looked up and smiled. "I'd tell you that mice in a hospital were unhygienic, but as their Aeslin, I believe we can count them as family members and let this one slide. How are you feeling, Miss Price?"
"Totally better," I said. "Can I get up?"
"Given that your injuries should be completely healed by this point, yes, you may get up whenever you like." He lowered the clipboard. "I'm Dr. Morrow. I've been responsible for your care while you were here."
Recognition sparked. "You're the one who contacted me about the Maninagil," I said.
"Yes, and we very much appreciate you taking care of that for us. My mate and head nurse spoke very highly of your handling of that matter, which is why I was willing to take your case. We don't treat many humans at St. Giles."
"Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to look after me."
"The pleasure was all mine, Miss Price." Dr. Morrow smiled. "I know how much you've done for this city. Thank you."
"You're welcome," I said.
"I brought some clothes for you," said Uncle Mike. "You want me to take the mice so you can get dressed?"
"Please.
It wasn't like the mice hadn't seen me naked before. That was sadly unavoidable, no matter how much I try to avoid it. But I still had standards.
Thought so.
Uncle Mike handed me a folded bundle before standing, making a sweeping motion with his hands.
Come on, you lot. There's cheese and cake in the waiting room.
Cheering and hailing his name, the mice scampered from my bed and streamed across the tiled floor, disappearing between Dr. Morrow's bare, vaguely taloned feet. He watched this with an air of vague discomfort, finally saying,
"We don't treat many human patients, but the ones we do treat rarely come with their own traveling biosphere."
"My family is special," I said with a smile.
"I'm getting that idea. Please don't leave without speaking to me, Miss Price."
With that, the doctor stepped out of my hospital room. Uncle Mike paused long enough to kiss my cheek, and then he was gone as well, shutting the door behind himself. I waited a few minutes to be sure that no one was going to come barging in before I stretched slowly and folded back the covers, finally moving into a full sitting position. I was wearing one of those pale green hospital gowns. It was almost a relief to realize that those were just as much standard issue in cryptid hospitals as they were in human ones. I took a breath, steeling myself, and pulled the gown up to get a look at my stomach where Peter had shot me. Dr. Morrow was telling the truth. The gunshot wound was gone, and while the skin there was slightly paler than the skin around it, there was no scar. I touched it lightly with the tips of my fingers, feeling the first tears wet my cheeks. I was going to be okay. I was going to be better than okay, in fact. And that meant that whatever came next, it was going to be something that I needed to deal with. Uncle Mike had chosen well where clothes were concerned. He brought jeans, a tank top, a flannel shirt, my loosest hip holster, and a brace of throwing knives for me to hide wherever it would make me most comfortable. For shoes, he had a pair of broken-in trainers and some thick wool socks. By the time I had the last of the knives secured inside my clothes, I felt almost like myself again. I tried to hold on to that feeling as I walked to the door, opened it, and stepped out into the hall. Remembering the promise Uncle Mike had made to the mice, I paused for a moment to listen before making my way toward the sound of cheering. When I reached the waiting room, there was a full-scale dance number going in the middle of the floor, with the mice literally waltzing around with their slices of cake and chunks of cheese. Uncle Mike was watching with detached amusement. Ryan and Eastis with something approaching awe. Dominic wasn't watching at all. He was staring fixedly at the hall, waiting for me to appear. He straightened as I came into view, and by the time I reached the doorway, he was standing, stepping around, dancing mice as he made his way toward me. Ryan turned to see where Dominic was going, and his face split in a wide smile.
"Verity, you're up and moving again."
"I am," I agreed. "Hey, Eastis."
"The mice are performing a dance of thanks," she informed me, frowning. "You should observe the mice."
"All right," I said. I let Dominic gather me into his arms and leaned up against him, my shoulders to his chest, as we stood and observed the mice. Eastis clapped her hands, happy as I'd ever seen her, while Ryan looked tolerantly on. Uncle Mike caught my eye and smiled. This was it, then. This was my life. Since it was going to continue, I might as well get used to it. There are worse fates. Chapter 25
Family, faith, and knives. Those are the things that last in this world. Everything else is essentially extra.
Evelyn Baker. St. Giles Hospital, an establishment for the care of cryptids. There was one thing I had to do before I could leave the hospital. Everyone knew I had to do it. And so when I said that I was going to go and talk to the doctor, they all let me go. Even Dominic. Even the mice. There are some things that we have to do alone. Grandma Angela was sitting next to Sarah's bed when I came into the room. She looked up at the sound of my footsteps and smiled.
"Hello, Very Very," she said, making no effort to be quiet.
There was no reason for it. Sarah was deeply unconscious, and from the slow, shallow rise and fall of her chest, she was at no risk of waking up. She was dressed in a pale green hospital gown, just like I'd been. She was flat on her back, like a princess in a bad Disney remake of some ancient fairy tale. Only it was going to take more than a kiss to wake her up. "Hi, Grandma," I said, walking over to the bedside. "How's she doing?"
"Asleep, mostly. But I think she's getting better, a little bit at a time. It can be hard to tell since I can't pick up what she's projecting."
Grandma reached over and smoothed Sarah's hair back from her forehead. I swallowed hard. "Are you shielding the rest of us right now?"
"Yes,"
Grandma nodded.
"I didn't want to risk it being something that wasn't... well, that wouldn't go over well."
"But it could be important. Maybe we need to know." I stood a little straighter. "Can you unshield me? Just long enough for me to tell you what she's projecting at the rest of us?" Grandma looked unsure.
"Verity,
please. This is partially my responsibility, even if it's not my fault. And I've had Sarah screaming in my head before. I'm a big girl. I can take it."
"If you're sure..."
"Will it help?" Very slowly, Grandma nodded.
"I think it will. Yes."
"Then do it."
"All right."
She looked at me gravely. The edges of her irises went white, the lack of color spreading into the blue like frost. And just like that, the static buzz of telepath nearby returned, Sarah's presence once more making itself known to my mind. I hadn't realized how much I'd missed it until I finally had it back again. Then her thoughts came flooding in, hot on the heels of the static. There were no words, just an emotional slurry of images and feelings and panicked reactions. I staggered, eyes going wide. Grandma half stood, and I gestured for her to sit back down as I braced myself and started trying to sort through what I was receiving. It wasn't easy. "She's scared," I said finally. "She doesn't know how she did what she did. She doesn't know whether it's something she should have been able to do." She volunteered, but she didn't think it would be quite that easy or quite that strong. "So she's scared. And she's afraid that because it was so easy, it's going to be something she wants to do again. Like this is something she'll just do now." "But you won't," I thought fiercely. "Sarah, do you hear me? You won't do anything like that unless you don't have any other choice, because you're one of the best people I know. And good people just don't do that kind of thing. So don't be scared of something that's never going to happen. That's just silly." There was a brief pause in the overwhelming flood of guilt. I didn't know for sure whether that meant she'd heard me, but I still took it as a good sign.
"What else?" asked Grandma.
She really did hurt herself. It was easy, but it was a strain at the same time, like those people who get hopped up on adrenaline and throw cars around. She's afraid to be awake, because if she's awake she might manipulate people just to avoid straining herself further. Grandma nodded.
"That's what I was afraid of. Well, we can keep her out long enough to get her home, where there's nobody she can do that to."
Grandma didn't receive. Grandpa was irreverent, and having died once, he was basically immune to telepathic influences. My Uncle Billy might have had more issues, but he wasn't living at home at the moment, and he could stay away while Sarah recovered. "She's going to get better, right?" I bit my lip as I waited for her answer. To my deep relief, Grandma nodded.
"If she's projecting clearly enough that you can hear her, but not so strongly that she's knocking you unconscious, then yes, I think there is a very good chance that she's going to get better."
"Good." I looked sternly at Sarah's still, pale form. "You hear that? You're going to be fine.
And if you're not, I'm going to kick your ass.
I mean that, whether you can hear me or not. I mean it.
You're a good cousin, very, very, said Grandma.
I'm a terrible cousin who leads Sarah into the path of danger because I think she needs to get out more, I said. I'm also a terrible granddaughter.
Grandma blinked.
Oh? How's that?
I'm going to let you be the one who tells Artie.
Much to my relief, she laughed.
Oh, you are a terrible granddaughter.
She paused.
There is one thing you can do to make it up to me.
Name it.
Can you watch Sarah while I go and get myself something to eat? I haven't wanted to leave her unattended for long, but it seems to me that you have a pretty good handle on things.
I smiled. Grandma might not be a receptive telepath, but she knows how to read people, and she knew that I wanted some time with Sarah alone.
Take as long as you need, I said.
Grandma hugged me before she left the room. I took her seat next to Sarah's bed, reaching over to take Sarah's hand in mine. Her skin was cool, but no more than usual. Cuckoos run a little cold compared to humans.
Hey, Sarah, I said, trying to mentally project the words as I said them. I wanted her to hear me with her ears, as well as with her mind. I just wanted to say thank you. I mean, you saved my ass back there. If you hadn't shown up when you did, well, this would be a really different scene, and I don't make nearly as good of a Sleeping Beauty as you do. Not that you're a Sleeping Beauty, more of a Snow White with your coloring. Too bad Artie isn't here. He could kiss you awake. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Silence from Sarah. There was no change in the mix of thoughts and emotions rolling off of her. I sighed. I know you're feeling pretty rotten right now, but seriously, you found the best solution. You found the answer where everybody walked away. How many cuckoos would have done that? Most of them would have just reached for the matches and watched the whole thing burn.
You did the right thing. You did the best thing. You did the thing that saved the most lives. And that's why I love you.
Silence from Sarah. But I thought, for just a second, that I felt her fingers tighten on mine. I closed my eyes. So Grandma says that you get to go back to Ohio for a little while. You like it there, right? You'll have all your books, and you can pick up your comics from the comic book store for the first time in, like, a year. Lots of spandex drama for you to catch up on. Speaking of drama, you realize we're stuck with Dominic now, right? The Covenant won't be coming back for him. I talked until I ran out of words, and then I just sat there and held her hand, listening to the mixture of thoughts and images that came pouring off her. This, too, was a part of my life, remembering that everything costs, and sometimes what it costs is more than we want to pay. But we pay anyway, because that's the right thing to do. Sarah would get better. She had to. I was still sitting there, holding Sarah's hand, when Grandma came back into the room. She came and stood next to me, putting her hand on my shoulder. And the three of us stayed that way for quite some time.
Epilogue. Any ending where you're still standing on your own feet is a happy one. Alice Healy. A semi-legal sublet in Greenwich Village. 3 days later. With the Covenant out of Manhattan, it was safe to return to my apartment, and with the apartment's actual owner returning from her year-long sabbatical at the end of the month, it was also time to start packing my things. It was time for me to go home. Uncle Mike was already on the way back to Chicago. He'd taken Grandma Baker and Sarah with him when he left, promising to drop them in Columbus, where Grandma would be able to focus on nursing Sarah back to a reasonable facsimile of normal. Sarah was still asleep when they left. As far as I knew, Grandma was planning to keep her that way all the way home. I didn't question it. She knew better than I did what was safe for cuckoo biology.
Kitty had accepted my resignation with a minimum of argument once I explained that I was leaving the city. New York was too dangerous for me, at least for a little while. My parents and I were both right when we said that my time in Manhattan would determine my future. I was just wrong when I said that my future was going to be in ballroom dance. That was a good world. It was one that I enjoyed visiting and would probably be a part of for the rest of my life. But it wasn't my world. I was a price. I was a cryptozoologist. I needed to accept that, with all the good things and bad things that it included. And that meant that I needed to focus on my training. If I was going to be a serious cryptozoologist, I needed to get better. I needed to make sure that I would never be caught flat-footed again. It was time to approach my real calling the way I had always approached dance, with total dedication and my whole heart. Well, most of my heart anyway. I could save a few bits out for special purposes. The mice scurried around my feet, carrying small items and articles of my clothing to the appropriate boxes. The sacred ritual of packing all the crap was one that they knew well, and they were surprisingly good at not getting stepped on. I was packing my collection of perfume bottles filled with holy water in sheets of egg cup foam when there was a knock at the front door. I straightened. I'd been waiting for that knock all day, but my hands still shook when I heard it. Slowly, I walked to the door and called. "Who is it?" "Let me in, you infuriating woman," said Dominic. Smiling, I undid the locks and opened the door. Dominic DeLuca was standing in the hall, wearing his oh-so-classic black duster, holding a paper sack of what smelled like fried chicken in one hand. He held it up. "I thought you might be hungry." "Starving," I said, and stepped to the side. "Come in." He did, stepping past me before turning to look in my direction.
"Verity,
I would have called, but I didn't have your number." I closed and locked the door. "That's going to have to change, you know. You can't be the mysterious disappearing boy anymore if we're going to do this thing."
"Do what?"
he asked. There was a hopeful note in his voice that told me I was doing the right thing. I'd already been almost sure, but it was still nice to hear it confirmed. I turned to offer him a shrug and a smile. "I'm leaving for Oregon in the morning. Renting a U-Haul and everything, since I can't exactly ship the mice across the country via FedEx, and it would be nice to have a little time to just drive. I thought you might want to come with me. There's a lot more to America than New York, you know."
"You would want me to come with you?"
This was it, then. This was the moment of truth. For both of us. I reached out and carefully took the bag of chicken from his hand. He let it go without resistance, and didn't look in the least bit surprised when I chucked it into the kitchen. A river of mice followed the bag, cheering. I stepped closer to him, closing the distance between us. "You said you loved me before," I said. "Did you mean that?"
"With all my foolish heart," he said.
I put my arms around his shoulders, offering him a very small smile. "Then yes, I want you to come with me. I want you to come to Oregon. I want you to meet my family. You chose me over the Covenant of St. George, so I guess that means I need to show you that you did the right thing."
"Really?"
There was something I hadn't said to him yet, even though he'd said it to me. Realizing that I was doing this all out of order. Who invites a guy to come meet their parents before they tell him whether they love him or not? I leaned in close and whispered, "I love you." Dominic didn't say anything. He just tilted his head to close the distance between us and kissed me, hard and desperate. He was shaking. I hadn't realized it until that moment, but so was I. I clung to him, returning his kiss with all the force of my own fear behind it. The fear that I had lost him when the Covenant came and made him choose between us. The fear that I had lost everything when they took me.
There was so much fear. But some things are stronger. Like love. And the knowledge that sometimes... you can win. The scorching hot kisses don't hurt either. Dominic wrapped his arms tight around my waist, literally lifting me off the ground as he started walking backward down the hall. I pulled my mouth away from his long enough to shout, belatedly, "Food for privacy! Food for privacy!" The cheering of the mice accompanied us all the way into the bedroom, shutting off only when Dominic kicked the door shut behind us. We could finish packing in the morning and still be on the road by noon. There was a whole country out there for us to cross before we got to Oregon. And for once, I had a guy I wouldn't need to warn about my family. Maybe I'm naive, but if that's not a happy ending, then I don't know what is. This has been an Audible Frontiers production of Midnight Blue Light Special, written by Seanan McGuire, narrated by Emily Bauer. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2013 by Seanan McGuire. Production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.